Brady has put Todd Bowles in an inexcusably uncomfortable position. Nobody can piss you off like I can. It was unnecessary. It was thoughtless. It wasn't smart football.
Buccaneers fans, JoeBucksFan.com World Headquarters did not burn down, although it was close. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport Richie himself, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, the baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, and all the fun today and all the analysis and all the angles we're going to cover, Ira. It's all presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, where they have inventory. Big time inventory on the lot right now. Go take a test drive, which was not the easiest thing to do around the country recently. But you know what? Bill Curry Ford, they got it going on over there. GM Sean Sullivan, he's going to take care of you personally. He's giving everybody a $500 gift card if they order a new vehicle, and there's no deposit. And they're picking up the times on delivering the vehicles. It's turning around quickly. They've got their nationwide lifetime warranty on used vehicles and new vehicles. And now they've got a whole great thing with certified used vehicles. So many great improvements every other month at Bill Curry Ford, your cutting edge dealership, a Tampa tradition for 61 plus years. Big Storm Beer, Ira, I'm so glad that we have these podcasts toward the end of the week when people are really doing their beer drinking, Ira, because you know what? Big Storm Beer is the beer. It's Florida's best craft beer. It's brewed locally. They are great community servants. And you can learn all about Big Storm Beer at BigStormBrewery.com. Tap rooms in Orlando, Odessa, Clearwater, the flagship location. Follow them on social media, Sage, because they've got all kinds of live music and happenings. And, of course, they've got their tap room down in Cape Coral as well for our listeners down there. And Florida's Elite Restoration, we love them. We'll hear more about them later. That's your first phone call when you have any disaster in your time of need, flood, fire, mold, whatever it is, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Now, Ira, this was a historic upset on Sunday, and we're going to get into some of the key points. All the fans know what happened, and we're going to unleash Lee a little bit later here because he's got some fire that we had to let him calm down for a while. Ira, I got to hit you with this, but first, how you doing? How you feeling, and you know what's going on?
I'm feeling good, Stevie. I'm down a couple of pounds. Even though I had two Brumosas on Sunday afternoon to try to wash away the taste of that loss on Sunday. Indefensible, inexcusable. We are not going to pin this all on little Luke Getteke. I don't care how bad he's playing. And by the way, let me start this podcast off in grand style. For 5 weeks, I have been claiming, with nobody agreeing with me, that the protection in front of Brady has been very good. Very good. And that includes Luke Getteke. I said that for 5 weeks. I turn on the broadcast with Daryl Johnston, who in 3 hours didn't tell me one freaking thing that I didn't know. and he made, 28,000 that day. But somebody on that broadcast, Lee, could have been him, maybe the play-by-play guy, said going into this game, Tom Brady had been the least pressured quarterback.
Last week, out of curiosity, I looked at a bunch of passing stats, and there was no evidence that suggested that Brady was fighting for his life. I could not find any corroborating evidence that Brady was haggard.
I watched the Chiefs play the Bills. Now, granted, the Bills have Von Miller. But, Steve, Von Miller's only on the field for like 35% of the snaps. He's not there all the time. Every time I look at Mahomes, Steve, the guy's running for his life. He's running out of the pocket with a guy chasing him. I don't see that with Brady. I don't see it. Even Sunday, I didn't see it. So all I'm saying is for everybody that's, coming down hard on this O-line, they can't do this, they can't do that. Now, look, they can't block for the run, Lee. I'll be the first to admit. Lee, they finally let Brady sneak the ball, and they finally give in to logic and listening to me, and they let Brady do what he does so well, sneak the ball. Lee, there was absolutely no push up front. Zero. No. Hainsey had his ass handed to him right in the middle. Brady had nowhere to go. You know, they're not blocking well for the run, Lee. They're not.
No.
But, you know, to rip this offensive line like Brady's got no time to throw, I just think that's crazy. I'm tired of people making excuses.
So am I.
You know, I am. And we'll get into the Brady cutting corners thing because I feel strongly about it. We'll get into that later. But Lee's not playing particularly well. And when you're not, and then you ream out the guys that are paid.
All right. Now we're going to throw some lightning bolts here, Sage, because that's what I wanted to get to first. So let me set an important stage here because I need your explanation. We need your wisdom on this podcast. And in case anybody doesn't know, I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper is the other voice of Joe Bucks Fan. Ira, look, you got to explain this to me. Let me set the table here. Tom Brady, he started screaming at the offensive line on the first series, not picked up by the cameras. Now, my sources told me this was going on in real time right after the first series where the Bucks gained 1 yard, a 3-and-out with the ball to start the game. And later, Monday night on his podcast, at the very end, after, you know, most people tuned out because he was talking to Kevin Durant, he explained that he started yelling in the first series because, hey, that's his job. You know, if the guys come out a little flat and they got 1 yard, that's unacceptable. And that's why would he not speak up? It would be a dereliction of duty if he didn't start chewing guys out. Later, third quarter, I think it was, or late second, the cameras picked him up, yelling at guys, half encouraging, telling them that they're effing better than they're playing, and they got to dig deep. And if he yells at the guys in 2020 and 2021, everybody loves it. Oh, it's Tom Brady. Now he yells at the guys, and there's a problem all of a sudden. If there's a player on the Bucks who in week six thinks, hey, who's this Brady guy? He didn't go to practice, and he's yelling at us. If that's your attitude in week six after playing a couple of years with Tom Brady, or you're a young guy on the line, then weed out those guys now and just cut them because they got the wrong attitude if you got Tom Brady yelling at you in week six to pick it up. I don't care if he missed a practice or not. You have no business going there. And anybody, in my opinion, who thinks he's out of line or stepping over a line or something isn't paying attention. So you explain this to me, Ira.
All I'm saying, and I didn't say anything yet about Brady going to Kraft's wedding and missing 10 days of training camp. I didn't say anything about that. Hey, all I'm saying in terms of reaming out teammates is, Lee, you got to be playing well yourself at that moment, at that point, to enhance your credibility. I don't care how many Super Bowls you have. Lee, he's not playing particularly well. He's not playing bad, but he's not playing particularly well. He's not playing championship football, Lee, in terms of his accuracy. Lee, you were there. You saw it. He threw a lot of balls in the dirt. They're not all bad patterns. They're not all drop balls. So
it's a dicey thing. It's human nature, I would think. If some guy who blew off practice in a game, and he did, to go to a wedding of an owner that doesn't own your team, that would get to me. That would like, hey, pal, I was here all week. Where were you? But there's the huge but. Look who we're talking about. And if we want to argue, well, he has no right to bark at his offensive line because he wasn't playing well, are you suggesting that if Kyle Trask came in, he had enough credibility to chew out the offensive line if he threw a couple of good passes? Really? No, come on. No, no. Brady's Brady. Well, first off, those guys like him. You know, Brady set himself up. If you're going to take off a practice, I don't care how insignificant the practice was, if you're going to blow off the meeting, I don't care how insignificant it was, if you're going to fly to the game and back, you're on your own private plane, not on the team plane, you better win. If the Bucks won that game, if the Bucks were able to kick a field goal and win that game, this would not even be discussed. Not even be discussed. But they lost. Brady set himself up. I would be pissed even if it's Brady, I would be pissed. Like, hey, I'm out here doing what I'm supposed to do. You know, I'm not God. I'm not John Hanna. I'm giving it my best. Maybe it's not my best today, but at least I was at practice. At least I was in the meetings. Don't you come at me with that. That's just me.
That's a good point that he makes, Steve, in terms of if the Bucks were 5-1, this narrative would totally change, Steve. Nobody would be talking about Brady going to Kraft's wedding. Nobody. But they're not 5-1. And Brady, I'm not saying he's a problem, but he's not hasn't been the solution. Steve, this is an offense that's averaging 20 points. Steve, it's down 10 points from last year, and you can't blame it all on little Ali Marpet.
Well,
he is little now. That's true. You're right.
The blame game is always fun, Ira, but I reject a lot of your notions, Ira. Before the Pittsburgh game, Brady was leading the NFC in passing yards with one interception. So if you're leading the NFC in passing yards with one interception, that is called fantastic efficiency. I don't care how you slice it.
He was third overall in the NFL in passing yards.
Yeah. So I just rejected Ira. The guy you're talking about is accuracy. Right now he's got a 67% completion rate, which is one of the very best of his career if his season were to end right now. I'm not saying he's lighting it up, but at the end of the day, Russell Gage against Pittsburgh let a perfectly thrown touchdown pass go right through his hands. It was low. It was exactly where it was supposed to be, and he didn't squeeze it. If he squeezes that, we're all walking around saying, man, Brady threw that laser right there. What a throw. And he made another great throw, legendary throw to Kate Otten. What a placed pass that was. And another one to Godwin in between three defenders. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. And that's just one guy who dropped the ball. I can't buy any of this, Ira. I don't think that he's playing poorly. I don't think he's playing great. But I don't think he's the problem. Man, if these guys are saying Tom Brady, you know, didn't show up, I would suggest this, Ira. Todd Bowles, I guess I'll ask you, Ira, do you think Todd Bowles gave him permission to go to the wedding and skip Saturday? And by asking for permission, I'm saying, do you think Brady said, Coach, do you mind if I skip Saturday because I want to go to Kraft's wedding? He's like a second father to me.
I got a very simple answer. First of all, I want to respond to your Mr. Statistics about passing yards and one interception. In the words of the great Lee DeKemper, scoreboard, points on the board. I'm tired of seeing Ryan Suckup, who has been the Bucks' best offensive player in 2022. We don't like that. How bad is that? So now, Steve, to your other point, let's talk about Todd Bowles, Lee, and Tom Brady. I've said it before, I said it on the Mad Dog, and I'll say it to you, Lee. Brady has put Todd Bowles in an inexcusably uncomfortable position. What the hell is Todd Bowles, a first-year coach of this franchise, supposed to say when the GOAT wants to go to Kraft's wedding, when the GOAT wants 10 days off in training camp? What the hell is Todd Bowles supposed to do, Lee? Is he supposed to pick a fight with Tom Brady? It's just not fair, Lee.
Well, speaking of not fair, you got to turn the page on this 10 days, Ira, in August. How has that affected him in October? It's late October. It's almost Halloween. That's old news. And I've said this before. I'll say it again. If Brady had a sprained ankle and wasn't at practice for 10 days, no one would say a damn thing. But he goes to the Bahamas, which I'm still convinced, by the way, that was set up as a package to get him to come back. So, I mean, he, as Steve points out, he was doing fine. 10 days or not. That's like talking about George Brett's hemorrhoids.
Well, Lee, the only reason that it's a story is the offense is not any good. It's not any good, Lee.
Is he blocking? Is he running the ball? Is he the one telling Julio Jones that his knee screwed up? I mean, he can only do so much, and he's what he's asked to do. He's doing okay. This 10 days doesn't mean a damn thing right now. Might have meant something first week of September, our first game in September, maybe second week. But it's almost Halloween. And up until the Steelers game, he was throwing fine. Mars is behind the moon. We might as well say that. That's why the Bucks stink.
Well, Lee, as you will articulate in this podcast, you have your own ideas of what the heck's going on with this offense.
Got someone in my crosshairs, let's put it that way.
All right, Ira, look, going back to the question I asked you, though, do you think Brady asked for permission? And if he did ask for permission, wouldn't the players turn their attitude, if they were to have attitude about Brady yelling at him, wouldn't they turn that attitude toward the head coach? I would suggest if I were on the team and I knew that Brady's yelling at me and I don't like it, I'd be like, you know, why'd the coach let him off? Because the word gets around the team, oh, Brady's got an excused absence. He won't be here Saturday. So I think players turn that more on the coach, not on the guy who got permission to walk away.
Yeah, that's a great point. With the Harold Goodwin standing right there and didn't even blink an eye.
Steve, yeah, we ain't talking about Don Shula over here. Take it easy. This ain't Don Shula. Bowles doesn't have 345 wins. I mean, come on. Right. Reasonable.
Before we get to some of the Sage, before we get to some of the reasons behind the loss, I wanted to, or what our theories are on the most important reason behind the loss, because I think that's just important to put together as we go forward in our, you know, Sage perspective on the team here, your Sage perspective. Bowles was asked this week, Ira, if Brady gets special treatment, and he said no. Now, Chris Sims went on a hell of a rant on NBC Sports saying, why is Todd Bowles saying that? Why is he lying? When he said, when I played for the Bucks, Rondé Barber, Warren Sapp, those guys got special treatment. Everybody knew that those guys could get away with saying and doing things that I couldn't, and that's okay. And Tom Brady should get special treatment. Why is Todd Bowles out there telling everybody, oh no, special treatment. Other players miss time like this, and it's no big deal. Why is he saying that? What do you think of that?
I agree with Chris Sims, and I don't always agree with Chris Sims. Lee, you know that. In this case, I think he hit a bullseye. I think Bowles should have said what everybody knows, Lee. It's Tom Brady. And if he says it, people would be okay with it. They're not going to rise up. Yeah, it's Tom Brady. Lee, the great baseball players, Albert Pujols, when he was with the Cardinals in his prime, yeah, he got cut a little slack if he wanted to, and nobody would say a damn word about Albert Pujols, nor should they. Why Todd Bowles has to stand up there and say he doesn't get any special treatment, Lee, you lose a little credibility like that. Bowles is trying to find his way through a difficult period. You know, they're not in trouble. They're tied for first place. I think they're going to win the division. But they're struggling right now. And when you struggle, just come out and tell the truth, and people will roll with it.
What if Bowles, and I'm not worried, I don't care about the fourth estate. I don't care about the ancillary reaction. What would the reaction be in the locker room if Bowles came out and said, yeah, there's Brady's rules, and then there's everybody else?
Well, Lee, I think they all know it. Lee, they all know it. Okay. So, you know, I think he would be stating the obvious, Steve, within the confines of the locker room.
Yeah, exactly. Suppose Carlton Davis walks up to the coaching staff and says, Coach Bowles, I'd like to have my personal trainer here at every practice, and I'd like to have him on the sidelines during the game like Alex Guerrero. What are they going to tell him? They'll be like, what are you talking about? So everybody knows that the guy's got his personal trainer all over the place. He doesn't come out to practice with the team. He comes out a little late in training camp, whatever he's doing, which is fine. So I think they already know. I agree with you, Ira.
Steve, correct me on this. I don't know. You studied the videos much more than I do. Do you ever see Brady and team videos, like, you know, when you see Todd Bowles addressing the team right after a game, right? Do you see Brady in those videos?
Oh yeah, he's there.
What I was going to point out is Sunday was the first time I've seen Brady in a locker room when he wasn't walking straight out. After the games, I've only seen him twice in the locker room after the games, and he was walking straight out from the press conference, straight across the locker room to the exit door. Sunday, he was in there for the longest time, huddled up with Ryan Griffin and Blaine Gabbert. I have no idea what they were talking about, but they talked for the longest time. Must have been 20, maybe 30 minutes they were talking together. Brady sat at his locker. Gabbert sat in his locker. Ryan Griffith was standing up, who I have no idea what the subject of the discussion was, but they talked at least 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes.
Lee, you blew a chance here. You could have walked in with a box from the Premonti brothers, and you could have walked right up to Brady's locker and thrown him a half a sandwich.
I'll tell you where I did blow it. You know, there's almost no use going to a losing locker room because they're not going to say anything. And what you get is pretty much pabulum. And so I'm waiting at the elevator. You guys know this. They do this in Orleans often. They hold the elevator for the coaches. And once the coaches are down, the media gets to go down. So there were a bunch of people lined up waiting on the elevator. Here come the Bucks coaches. Then here come the Steelers coaches. And there was some guy, two or three people to my left, a tall guy wearing like a denim jacket, had a beard, baseball cap, skinny guy. And he seemed to know every Steelers coach. A couple of them he bro-hugged, and he was really happy with the win. So I'm getting on the elevator, and as I walk in the elevator, I turned around. It was Ben Roethlisberger.
Wow.
And dumbass me should have said, screw the locker room, talk to Roethlisberger. Because obviously he knows Leftwich. He knows Arians very well. He's Arians' neighbor. They're big golfing buddies. I should have said, screw the locker room, talk to Roethlisberger. If he would have talked. I don't know if he would have talked. And I screwed up. I didn't realize until I got downstairs. And I'm like, oh, crap, he's probably already gone. But the one thing I did hear when I was getting on the elevator to just explain to people what a bolt of lightning that loss was, the play-by-play man of the Steelers, Bill Hargrove, in the elevator area, they were piping in a Steelers radio broadcast, and he was cutting to commercial. He was going to a commercial, and he said, a shocking win by the Steelers.
Yeah, it really was shocking. And Steve? Speaking of Roethlisberger, Stevie, it appears that Big Ben had plenty to say this week about one Mr. Thomas Brady.
Yeah, he took what you would call a couple of pot shots on his podcast. Apparently Roethlisberger has one, and just said he didn't look interested and, you know, just, hey, he's the greatest, but he didn't look very interested. Didn't look like he wanted to be out there, which coming from a fellow quarterback and that fraternity there, that's kind of rough, Ira.
Guys, let me say one more thing about number 12, and it's tough not to dwell on him, you know, after a loss like that where, and Lee, I don't want to hear any, I don't want to hear this focus on Trubisky completing a couple of passes. I don't want to hear it, Lee, because, Lee, I'll tell you why. After the first drive, you know, they drove it, and it was a legitimate Steeler touchdown, and they got the job done. But after that, Lee, they did nothing. That for about 45 minutes. I mean, nothing.
They had the defense held the Steelers to 20 points. When you got Brady, when you got Godwin, when you've got Evans, if you can't score 20, that's not on the defense. I'm sorry.
Right. So here's my point, Steve. And, you know, maybe I'm pushing this a little too much. You guys tell me. But, you know, Brady's main theme on Thursdays and after games, especially losses, we're all in this together. Everybody's got to play better. Everybody's got to communicate better. We all know the drill. Would it be so terrible, even if Brady doesn't believe it, if he says, I'm not playing up to my standards. I got to play better football. I feel I'm letting this team down. I got to look myself in the mirror. How about a little bit more introspection about himself publicly, Steve? Even if he thinks he's playing winning football, what's wrong with Steve? Would that be so terrible?
It wouldn't be so terrible, Ira. It might help a little if somebody says, are you playing well? But he's just going to say, you know, it's a team game and all that stuff. But I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. But Ira, I do want to ask you, I'm going to give you a little multiple choice here. Keep it easy. You don't have to write the essay question like you used to hate back in Brooklyn. I'm going to let you pick the main reason the Bucks lost, Ira. Special teams, lack of a run game, third down defense, or play calling? What's your answer here, or does the Sage have a different answer?
You can't go wrong by saying play calling, but I'm going to leave that up to DeKemper, and I know he wants to weigh in. I'm going to go with run game. They stink at it, Steve. They stink at it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, worst in the league.
Since week one, when they, you know, Fournette had a very good game, they can't run the ball. They're bad at it. I know you think this is a passing team, and it is, Lee, and it is. But they're not throwing it particularly well, and they're running it horribly. I don't know what's going on with Fournette. I don't know what's going on with the blocking. You're not getting any help from White. He has done nothing to deserve more carries, Lee. And Isbitz has told me not to mention Keyshawn Vaughn anymore on this podcast, so I won't. but, Lee, I'll go with the run game because nobody's paying any attention to the Buck ground game, and I'll let you pick your own multiple choice answer.
Well, real quick, when you were talking about why can't Brady fall on his sword, he said recently that he goes, no one is playing up to their capabilities, and that includes me. Did he not say that? None of us are playing to our capabilities.
That's a start, Lee. It's a start. I want a little more.
You're wanting Brady not to be Brady. It ain't going to happen.
What's your multiple choice answer, Mr. DeKemper?
Well, it's painfully obvious.
Lee, when I hear painfully obvious, my first thought goes to Florida's Elite Restoration, because that's the obvious, painfully obvious choice when you have a disaster in your home. You call them immediately. Mold, flood, whatever it is, storm damage, fire, call Florida's Elite Restoration. They're going to come out to your property. They are true professionals in the industry, and they will give you a complete free assessment of what's happening and how to attack fixing it, working with your insurance company so you don't get ripped off. Florida's Elite Restoration, they're also going to give you $500 if you use their services. You just have to let them know before you make that commitment. So after your free assessment or when you first call, let them know you heard about it at Joe Bucks Fan or Ira Kaufman, and you're going to get $500 off their services, restoration services. Florida's Elite Restoration, Sage, we've said it many times, and it's so important to emphasize, owner Josh Martin, 14 years in the insurance industry as an adjuster, so he knows the corruption, he knows the nonsense, he knows that side of the business, and that works for you to make sure you get what's coming to you with your insurance company when you have that flood damage, mold in your garage that's just taken over after a storm and a summer when you didn't realize it was growing. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Put that in your favorites, bookmark it, check out their website. That's your first phone call, Florida's Elite Restoration. All right, Lee, painfully obvious. We're going to let you loose now. Go ahead, man. I'm just glad you recovered from the wee hours of Sunday night. I was worried about you.
I was up at 3:00 in the morning. I'm surprised I didn't break my keyboard. I'm pounding on it. Steve even texted me about 2:00 in the morning. He goes, hey, man, that article you wrote, 5,000 words. And I basically, I don't give a shit. I'm pissed off.
Continue.
Look, the Steelers had a bunch of USFL players in the secondary. The best pass rusher in the league, arguably, wasn't available. The only flipping chance the Steelers had of staying in the game, much less winning, was if somebody was stupid enough to keep running the ball, especially when they were going nowhere. Ladies and gentlemen, I present you Exhibit A, Bucks offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich. That
now
was
the guy threw 40 passes, Lee. He threw 40 passes.
Throw 60. Look at the mismatches. Mike Evans, 4 targets. Are you kidding me? Against a bunch of scrubs. And I know Steve came out and said, oh, that's happened 14 times or whatever. That's not an apples and apples thing. Number one, how many times when Evans only had 4 or fewer targets was he being guarded by Marshawn Lattimore or Bradbury or Carolina or Jair Alexander of the Patriots or Packers? I mean, I can go on and on. That's absolutely not an apples and apples comparison. You had a bunch of freaking scrubs happy as hell they're wearing an NFL uniform on the field. You've got a Hall of Fame quarterback. You've got possibly a Hall of Fame receiver. You've got a Pro Bowl wide receiver on the other side. You're handing it off to Laren Fournette on the left freaking side of the ball where they're having problems. You got Tristan Wirfs on the right tackle. You got Shaq Mason right guard. You're running left. Idiot. It's bad enough he's freaking running the ball, not throwing, and he's running to the wrong side time after time after time after time. And this is where I get after Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles should have gone to the headset and said, Byron, enough of the yards for two yards. Enough. Start challenging those defensive backs. And what is it you always say, Ira? You always say, throw the ball up to Evans. We live in an era of pass interference. He'll get flags. Last year, he led the league in drawing flags. And, oh, by the way, if Mr. Leftwich did any kind of research, he would have known the referee crew that was working that day. Last year, 4th most pass interference flags. It was all set up to throw the freaking ball, to challenge those USFL players. with your superior mismatch. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. And I'm so close to calling for Clyde Christensen to take over the play calling.
Now, Lee,
that was irresponsible. He, you know, Byron Leftwich tomorrow on Thursday. Oh, he did what we do to try to win the game. No, Byron, you threw that game Sunday. You threw that game. Why? I don't know. Now, if they come out and say Brady is hurt, okay. If that was the case, should have had Gabbard in there. He could throw.
Irresponsible. Lee, I love your passion. Steve, if, may if I respond?
If the Bucs come down to the Atlanta game, neither going to win for the division, you know, win or go home, look out. You know better than Ira. Or you know, Ira, you know better than I do. You were in that locker room. You saw their reaction. You know they've got that Bucs game circled for revenge up in Atlanta. You know that. God forbid the Bucs go into week 17 or week 18, I should say, win or go home. That Steelers game, that's going to be on Byron Leftwich. There's no other argument. None. Any other argument? You're just trying to get, you're trying to piss me off. None.
No.
Zero. Period. What do you think Bill Belichick would have done? He would have thrown 40 freaking times in the first half.
Lee, I've proven on this podcast, and Steve knows it over the years, that nobody can piss you off like I can. So let me try again,
Byron Leftwich.
Steve, now here's what I'm saying. Now, Lee made a lot of good points, especially Mike Evans.
Where am I wrong?
Let me say right up front, gentlemen, the one thing I am absolutely sure of that will occur on Sunday in Charlotte. Normally, I would say what I'm sure of is a Buck victory. I can't say that anymore after what I just saw. But, Steve, what I can say with certainty is they will force the ball to Mike Evans on Sunday. That's a given. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. You know it, and I know it. Now, let me get back to Mr. DeKemper. Steve, am I wrong? Brady threw 52 passes. Then he threw 52 passes, and then he just threw 40 passes. So, Steve, in a way, it's not that they're not throwing the ball, you know, 65% of the time. They are. The problem is they can't run. They can't run, and they don't have Gronkowski. They don't have Antonio Brown, and they're not as good in the passing game. But I can't argue with Lee's very perceptive point. Look who the Steelers were missing on defense on Sunday, and that tilts the balance. Throw the ball freaking downfield, and Steve, they didn't do it.
By the way, Miles Jack was on NFL radio today, and I'm paraphrasing what he said. The Steelers expected him to go downfield. That's why they were playing so deep, the secondary was. They expected that. And they didn't do it. They couldn't. The way Jack was talking is like he couldn't believe it. They weren't testing him with Evans.
There's a lot of ways to look at it, but we do know the facts are that for much of this game, a practice squad call-up was covering Mike Evans. And yeah, I did type up that, hey, you know, it's not uncommon for Evans to have a couple games a year, three games a year where everybody says, oh, we should have targeted Mike more. But not against this type of competition. And it makes you wonder, Ira, because Evans played almost every snap. Godwin was over 80%. They buried Scotty Miller in this game, decided not to use him on offense. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the one thing you can be certain of when it comes to backup defensive backs, they don't have a lot of speed. Because speed is usually the difference maker when it comes to guys getting playing time and getting jobs in the league. And for me, for them to not test Scotty Miller deep when he'd probably get one-on-one coverage against a guy who has no experience, I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand that. Now I get, you know, that, hey, they probably didn't want to put Brady out there to have long developing plays and stuff, but it's really, really messy, Ira. Really messy, and I think the X factor is we don't know why Tom Brady isn't stepping in saying, hey, we're gonna check to this, and I'm gonna check to Evans running a slant, which of course he can catch and get some tough yardage. But between Leftwich and Brady, and it was just a mess. And the interesting thing is, Ira, where, you know, they're running left a lot, but they did run right, not enough. But when they really needed a fourth and one, and that final drive that they had second and one. Rashad White gets nothing up the middle. Brady's sneak up the middle gets nothing. They really needed a first down, fourth and one, the game on the line, essentially. What did they do? They bring Mike Evans in to come down and seal the edge alongside Tristan Wirfs and say, try to beat these guys. And Leonard Fournette powers for 7 yards on fourth and one. And why weren't they doing? Why weren't they challenging more of that all game? That's another question that we're not going to know.
And this ties into what you said earlier about, you know, people whining about the offensive line and about Gehrke. I'm not saying he played great, but let's think back to the last game of the playoffs, the Rams loss, much as it may pain some people. The Bucs offensive line, sans Tristan Wirfs, was getting taken to the cleaners. Von Miller was having a field day with Donovan Smith. The offensive line was just terrible. Josh Wells was getting killed. It was awful. And guess what the Bucs did? They adjusted, started doing max protect. Next thing you know, here comes the Bucs, and they tied it up. I don't see Leftwich doing a whole lot of adjusting. To me, becoming very clear that Bruce Arians had a hell of a lot more say-so with the nuts and bolts of the Bucs offense than what he led on or anybody else led on.
Lee, what else can you think at this point? You're absolutely right. What else can you think? Steve, to your point about the fourth and one call, I mean, I'm running up Tristan Wirfs' ass all day long when I run the ball. He might be the best offensive lineman in football.
Sage, in the multiple choice, Ira, just because it really got to me, and I know everybody's ignoring it, so I'm going to just take it for the sake of entertainment purposes, I guess. The special teams play for that guy, their backup kick returner, who admitted after the game that he was still having vision problems from a previous injury. The guy could barely see. How that guy, I'm serious, can't make this up. He ran untouched 89 yards on a kickoff. A, why aren't they kicking it out of the end zone? And why can't they cover up on a backup returner? 89 yards, that was the biggest play of the game. That was the biggest gaffe of the game. And that cost them the game.
It was a big play. Give credit, Lee, to Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis for hustling. They did. Mm-hmm. They hustled. And they settled for a field goal. Lee, they did. That's a four-point hustle. And I thought Dean played a very strong game.
He's going to make some money this coming March.
He played well. Lavonte David played well.
Well,
guys, there's a giant in the room that we haven't talked about. I don't want to spend too much time, Steve, but I'll get the ball rolling.
Hey, Sage, before you get to that big elephant, let me remind everybody, Bill Curry Ford, that's where you shop for a vehicle, 24/7 at BillCurryFord.com. No deposit. If you get a new vehicle, Sean Sullivan's going to give you $500 just for doing that. Bill Curry Ford, family tradition. We thank Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast, bigstormbrewery.com. Try a Bromosa today. And Florida's Elite Restoration, we heard about them, Sage, and their $500 offer to your listeners, floridaselite.restoration.com. That's your first phone call. Ira, before you get to your big elephant, I want to just throw this out there because it's really stunning. The Next Gen Stats, which, you know, is the technology that tracks the equipment that players are in, the guy who ran that kick return for the Steelers, that was like the 18th fastest miles per hour clocked in the NFL this year. And Jamel Dean ran the guy down at the peak of his run from 5 yards behind him. So Jamel Dean, you may have witnessed the fastest run in the National Football League this year with Jamel Dean closing that guy out.
Good observation, Steve. All right, I'll throw out the elephant. And again, I'm not blaming him. That's not the reason. Not the reason they're 3-3. But I want more, Lee. I want more from Vita Vea. I want more, Lee. I'm not seeing it, Lee. Tackle for loss. How about dropping a guy for a 3-yard loss? I mean, a running back. I don't want to hear these people saying this guy's the best I thought I heard some guy say the best interior defensive. You ever heard of Aaron Donald? I mean, well, what is this guy talking about? Forget about Aaron Donald. Lee, he's on another plane. Forget that, you know. Yeah. But the next group, I don't think Vita Vea is in the next group. Lee, I want more from him.
Not this year. Last year, yeah. Now, what do you think, Ira? This is coming from Ian Beckles, you know, the former Bucks guard. He claims that Sue was such a persuasive influence on Vita Vea that Vita Vea's dialed it back compared to previous seasons because he probably had Sue there, if not coaching him, certainly egging him on to be more aggressive.
It's an interesting theory, Lee. I don't know if I buy it. Vea played well times that Sue wasn't in the game next to him. He played well. I don't know if I buy it. He just doesn't look like the same player, Lee.
No. I can't blame him for the loss. It was a horrifically stupid play, but I can't blame him for the loss. He cost the Bucks 7 points, but I'm not calling him out for the loss. I know I said that 3 times now. Devin White's late hit was horrifically stupid. I had my binoculars on Kenny Pickett, Steelers first drive. I saw Devin White get past his block, and almost immediately Pickett got rid of the ball. My eyes went downfield, and all of a sudden I hear there's a late hit. I'm like, don't tell me Devin White did that. Devin White was a good 4 or 5 steps away from Pickett when he let the ball go. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. You know, Mr. People get bored playing defense when you got a lead, and I got to be responsible getting them fired up and all that. Just play smart football, will you?
Speaking about that play, and I'm glad that Lee brought it up, Bowles was asked about it this week. Steve said, you know, it was a busted play, called it a busted play, one of two that Devin White was responsible for. Also said that basically he's playing well this year, which he's playing okay. But, Steve, you know this, Steve. In the bowels of the locker room and the meeting rooms, Todd Bowles was furious about that brain fart by Devin White. It was unnecessary. It was thoughtless. It wasn't smart football. Now, he's not going to ream the guy out publicly, Steve, but Todd Bowles is very upset with Devin White with that play. Very upset.
Sage, he jumped on his radio show and called it a bad mistake and really emphasized that it was inexcusable. He did kind of ream him out, and he admitted at his news conference today that it was straight up Devin White's fault a few plays later when Najee Harris scored with nobody around him. That was White's responsibility. So he did flat out call him out, and that was a critical drive to give them some confidence. And, of course, every point mattered in this game.
You know why I'm not killing White for that play? The Bucks had 52 minutes to resolve that play. Yeah.
Real quick, Ira. There was a game last year, Ira, where Devin White had multiple personal fouls. I think it was the Saints game where he had the horse collar on Jameis and a roughing the passer in the same game. He's learned this before. It's a focus of the league, and all the coaches are telling these guys to back off because the penalties are coming. Vita Vea got one against Atlanta that really shouldn't have been. And you know, it was an emphasis all week for every team in the NFL. And he comes out on the first series and like he didn't even know that he didn't get the memo that you can't blast a quarterback well after he's released the football.
Absolutely. You know, Lee, one more quick point about Sunday's game, and we'll have another podcast where we'll preview the Carolina matchup. I mentioned it in my column, but I got to say it again because it's kind of mind-boggling. Lee, the Steelers had a legitimate drive on their opening possession. Legitimate. Scored a touchdown. For the rest of the half, they had about 35 yards of offense. And the Bucks trailed at halftime.
I know. Isn't that something?
Lee, that didn't happen. How does that happen?
Especially when you look at the talent the Bucks had and the superior mismatches in their favor. Like I said, that was Leftwich's Tennessee ready game. That's how bad that was. I certainly hope he doesn't have a capital collapse. That will mean probably the Bucks missed the playoffs, and hopefully that would mean Leftwich's won't be Leftwich won't be an offensive coordinator next year. I don't want to see.
I'm a little afraid of picking the Bucks at Carolina, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but you know, we'll talk about that later.
Well, Sage, I got to ask you this, and I'm not doing it for shock value. Absolutely not. The shock value would have been early in the week when Lee would have been throwing hammers and smashing smashing mirrors and all kinds of stuff. Todd Bowles jumped on his radio show, Sage, and he said the Bucks have toughness problems, that they're not tough enough on both sides of the ball. The short yardage failures are about toughness. He doesn't need a bunch, quote, a whole bunch of different plays. They just have to be better and tougher up front, both sides of the ball, plain and simple. His goal this offseason, Ira, was to run the ball a little more, be a little tougher. So he's flat out failed at his goal. But Ira, the Bucs are in a unique situation that I don't think I've ever seen before. They don't have a team right now with a winning record remaining on their schedule. Now, that'll change as the season goes. But I've never seen a team in week 7 that doesn't have one team with a current winning record on their schedule. If you look at the collection of quarterbacks they have to face, maybe there are three that you could make an argument are better than Tom Brady. If you match up the quarterback play, they should have the advantage in 8 of these games, and those teams are not juggernauts at all. They don't have any left on their schedule. If Todd Bowles, with Tom Brady healthy, if he can't get this team to a winning record and get them to win the division, if somehow they go 8-9 or they don't win the division, I think he should be fired, Ira, because there will be no excuse for what happened this year, and there will be no faith that he can correct it with a brand new quarterback. There's no evidence that he'd be able to groom a new quarterback, a young quarterback. If he can't figure out the offense with Tom Brady, how's he going to figure it out with who knows who? And I think it will be a colossal historic failure that everybody should wake up to. Is that too harsh?
I'd like to say that's crazy, Steve, but I can't. I can't. I'm putting myself in the shoes, those very expensive shoes, Lee, of the Glazers. Expensive. They ain't getting Tom McCann's over there, Lee. You know what I mean?
Wingtips.
Now look, Lee, we don't think the Bucks are going 8-9. I mean, we don't. But it's possible. It's possible.
You know, somebody commented in Steve's story about the about how, as we speak, there's nobody with a winning record on the Bucks schedule. Someone commented that doesn't matter. They just lost to a one-win team.
Well, there you go, Lee. That had lost 4 in a row and was playing terrible football. In the crazy instance that they go 8-9, they don't make the playoffs. Brady is healthy and plays all 17 games. I think the Glazers would have to take a very hard look at the head coach situation.
You really think they would get rid of Bowles after 1 year?
You can't go 8-9 with a healthy Tom Brady, Lee. You can't do it.
Yeah, I guess. Since we're talking about Brady, I want your feedback on this, Ira. You know, I listen to Michael Lombardi a lot, and I think he has a really good, you know, interesting, intelligent takes. I'm guessing he never watched the Bucks game, because he said a couple things that I just don't understand. You know, first he said Brady misses Gronkowski. And I don't think we could argue that. I don't think we could argue that at all. He certainly does miss Gronkowski. And that may be a big reason why the Bucks aren't getting the job done in the red zone offense. They're just not. But then we hear this pabulum. I heard this pabulum from Lombardi. The clowns on ESPN always say it. Oh, he misses Edelman. What? Guy threw for what, like 10,000 yards the last 2 years? He won the Super Bowl? He's missing Edelman? Are we sure about that?
That's nuts.
I know. And then this is the kicker for me, because maybe it's because I never watched the Patriots games. Maybe I have no idea about this guy's value. But I'm just sick of hearing this guy's name. He doesn't play football anymore. Lombardi said Brady misses James White. He misses the guy he could throw to the running back. Well, first, when did this James White... What was he, Roger Craig II? Was he ever in a Pro Bowl? I mean, good. I always hear about this James White. And, oh, by the way, Leonard Fournette's catching a lot of passes.
Yes, he is.
So I don't buy that Brady's missing an outlet valve for a running back to catch passes, because Fournette's catching passes. So I'm so sick of he's missing Edelman. He's missing Edelman. He's been for 10,000 yards in the last 2 years and won a Super Bowl. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's enough of Mike Lombardi. You know, Steve, he didn't have James White the last 2 years, and he averaged 30 points each year. So I don't want to hear it.
I guess Lombardi's son is the coach. He works for the Panthers. Let's put it that way. Lombardi said that it looks like the Panthers are two number one picks for McCaffrey. And Lombardi said, who's going to take McCaffrey? Forget the price. Who's going to take him? He thought maybe the Bucs. He just threw it out there. He said, but if Tampa trades two first-round picks for McCaffrey, they're crazy. I tend to agree.
Lee, nobody's trading two number ones for McCaffrey. Nobody.
Yeah, he hurt too much.
Yeah, nobody.
Sage, we got a lot to talk about on the next podcast. I'm glad Lee mentioned potential trades because I think the Bucs could go a lot of different directions, and I'm looking forward to exploring that with you. And I will end next podcast the moratorium on Keyshawn Vaughn talk, because if the guy can't if the guy can't get a look on the worst yards per carry rushing attack in the National Football League, if he can't get a carry, then he's useless. So maybe they need somebody else to try here. But Ira, it's been fun. We've had a lot to chew on, a lot to agonize about. We got a lot more to talk about. Vita Vea, I got to say, Sage, just to throw it in here, Vita Vea, 41 snaps. Cameron Hayward, who's like 34 years old, 54 snaps. Why can't Vea play more? I don't get it. But that's that. Sage, a final thought. Give it, spit it out. Lee and I are saying goodbye now. Lee, well done, well done. Ira, your last thought for Bucs fans as they take on their Thursday.
That was one rollicking podcast, gentlemen, highlighted by DeKemper's passion about Byron Leftwich. And I will say this. I will be with Mr. DeKemper at One Buck Place when he confronts face-to-face Mr. Byron Leftwich. And if the Kemper bows out and doesn't ask a tough question, I will step up in his place and I will put Leftwich's feet to the fire, because you know what, Steve? If we don't do it, nobody will.